Continue our coverage of the Arba'een commemorations taking place throughout the world today. We're now joined by Dr. Sayed Mohsen Fatemi, who is a published author and has done studies at Harvard University, amongst many other distinguished universities as well. Dr. Fatemi, thanks very much for joining us here on Press TV. I wanted to start off with the basics. You know, we're speaking about Arba'een. Many people are gathered, up to 15 million, they say, in Karbala. What is the significance of this day?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Arba'een has got the manifestation of a lot of things. It could be delineating the impact of the culture of Ashura. So we've been mourning for Imam Hussein for 40 days, and this demonstrates the depth and the profound layers of the incident from a psychological, cultural, political perspective. And it's got great significant implications in terms of interpersonal and intrapersonal competencies that can give rise to human development and expansion of spiritual development, emotional development, and intellectual development. Deep down, Arba'een, the semiotics of Arba'een delineates that we not only mourn for Imam Hussein, and we've been mourning for the past 40 days or so, but also we have the indication, the substantiation of a deep-rooted understanding of connectedness to the philosophy of life presented by Imam Hussein, and that philosophy has got significant implications, conspicuously salient implications in terms of the understanding of life, etiological aspect of life, epistemological layers of life, ontological ramifications of life, and whatever comes across in terms of the multifaceted layers of Ashura as a culture, as a philosophy, as a style of living, as something that can give inspiration, illumination to everybody.
Right, and you know, we're speaking about 15 million people out on the streets just of Karbala. Many would say that, you know, they're out there beating their chests over something that happened 14 centuries ago. Why are they out there speaking about something that happened 14 centuries ago when things have happened ever since as well? So then, you know, why concentrate just on the Battle of Karbala?
Yeah, that's a good question. Excavating the layers of Ashura would help us understand that this is not just an incident that has happened or transpired in one way or something, and then we discuss, for example, the etymology of that incident. It's something that gets you connected to the profound network of your understanding. It helps you get connected to the human nature. It's not a matter of a superficial, a perfunctory understanding of Ashura, where you just talk about, for example, an incident that occurred, for example, in a land numerous years ago or something. It's a matter of connectedness to deep, decent values of humanity. It's something that resonates with everybody, and that's why you can see millions of people, as many as millions of people all around the world, are demonstrating their mourning, their commemoration, and this demonstrates an echo, a resonance of human nature that gets connected to the philosophy of Imam Hussein. The martyrdom of Imam Hussein, in terms of semiotics of Ashura, demonstrates that something is deeply embedded within every human being, and that deep aspect of human being is going to be manifesting itself. It's going to be demonstrating its epitome with regard to Ashura. So Ashura is not just the manifestation of an event. It's a manifestation of a human philosophy. And people who just get connected to the etiological aspect of Ashura demonstrate that sense of resonance with the deep layers of human nature. And that's why the resonance is going to be demonstrating and is going to be explicating the profound layers of Ashura for every person in the world. So no matter you're here in New York, in Boston, in Paris, in Karbala, when you hear and you get connected to the profound layers of Ashura in terms of human nature and human fitra, you just see yourself filled with passion, filled with ebullience, filled with understanding, sagacity, and perspicacity. Ashura is going to revitalize, is going to resuscitate an understanding that life is not just going to be summed up, it's going to be circumscribed within the perceptible, tangible layers that we see. We assume that when we think about existence and the ontology of life, life is going to be just summed up in what we see and what we hear and what we smell and what we touch. Ashura tells us, Ya'lamuna bil-ghayb, which means that deep down this layer that we can see and we are connected to, there's also another layer. And that layer is going to be offering you a new horizon, a horizon of possibility, a novel understanding of life, a novel understanding of human nature. It helps you understand why people are sometimes get entangled with the sense of desperation, loneliness, helplessness, powerlessness. And once they get that sense of vivacity throughout Ashura, they come to realize that deep down their nature, there's a sense of revitalization, there's a sense of vivacity. And Ashura is going to awaken that sense of vivacity deep down every human being. Every human being, once he or she understands an ayatah of Ashura, the culture of Ashura, he or she finds himself or herself fraught with, brimmed with an ebullience that is not going to be expressed in words. It's beyond expressiveness. It's just beyond explanation, because it helps you elucidate the recondite layers of human beings in terms of the quintessential aspect of the goal-oriented life presented by a sublime transcendental layer of life. And the transcendental layer of life is something that is going to arise out of one ramification, one specific ramification of Ashura. So Imam Hussein is the manifestation of all those values, all those human virtues, all those decencies that one is going to search for in terms of having got that consummation of that perfect sense of human beings. And therefore, you can see as many as millions of people are going to get that feeling once they go ahead with that commemoration. All of them, based on their understanding, their competencies, their form of connectedness, they come to realize that there is something in me that is going to be revitalized, that is going to be revitalized through this subtle, clandestine, yet positive resonance of human values, human dignities, and it helps you understand how your identity is going to be formed, is going to be at the same time transformed in radical transformation of consciousness. Once you get that sense of sagacity out from Ashura, and Ashura paves the ground, facilitates a preamble for you in order to mobilize your forces for achieving that apex of transcendence because of getting connected to that sense of sublime philosophy of life.
Right now, so taking into account all of what you've said, I would imagine then that in your mind it would be natural for there to be resistance against this sort of movement, this movement of Ashura, because, you know, we have, for example, attacks on Ashura processions or Arbaeen processions in places like Pakistan, for example, where a number of people are killed. Was that to be expected, and what will happen regarding that counter movement, if I may call it, going forward?
Well, Imam Hussein himself is the manifestation of awareness, is the manifestation of illumination, is the manifestation of deep rooted ebullience in every human being, and is the manifestation of that sense of vivacity, that sense of livelihood that everybody is going to look for. And obviously, with that sense of sagacity, you're going to go beyond this sense of perfunctory layer of life. And people who are not attuned to that sense and come from this extremist perspective of prejudice and biases, and they are circumscribed and caged and cooped in their own ignorance, people who have got a sense of prochialism, a sense of circumscribing approach towards themselves and people around themselves, they don't like that because they are against salvation, they are against liberation. You know, every human being with an eye to understanding the sense and the philosophy of freedom, the sense of liberty, the sense of emancipation, the sense of human values, is going to find himself or herself synonymous with the philosophy of life presented by Imam Hussein. So once you see these extremists instigating movements, and you get them psychoanalyzed, you get them analyzed from different psychological perspectives, you see that deep down it's either ignorance or is a prochialism prompted and provoked by people who are going to etymologically go back to the same sort of bunker that fought, you know, against Imam Hussein, and that, you know, that bunker fought Imam Hussein, struggled against those values right from the beginning. So it could be obvious that those people or those extremist movements may arise at any time because they have that sense of propensity against the decent values. And you can see that all, you know, every time you talk about an oasis, you can always talk about a barren land in a metaphoric sense. So anytime you talk about silvers, you can always talk about coals. And you can talk about, you know, stricken layers of coals in the midst of silvers, or silvers in the midst of coals. So people who can't have that sense of tolerance, who can't have that sense of munificence, who can't have that sense of openness, flexibility, understanding, they obviously cannot see themselves liberated. I mean, they are cooped and caged more than anything else by the prison of their own mind. And that prison, that mindset, once it comes from a cantankerous, recalcitrant background of extremist perspective, and it's going to go against Sharia or against Quran, you can see the manifestation in different forms of brutality, in different forms of atrocities that are instigated nowadays in different places.
And speaking about those atrocities, you know, we have in the past year, for example, the word sectarianism has been thrown around a lot when we speak about this region's issues in places like Bahrain, Syria, etc. And I want to touch this sensitive topic with you because you seem to know this well and understand this well. You know, is this a division? Is this a division within the Muslim society, or is this something deeper that is happening in this movement, this counter movement that I mentioned in my previous question?
You see, the point is, and that's a subtle point, within the Islamic, the pristine Islamic understanding, there is always this great sense of peace. Prophet Muhammad salawatullah alayhi is the manifestation of peace, you know, is the manifestation of peace in interpersonal and intrapersonal relationship. One of the beauties of Islam lies in the fact that you are going to liberate yourself from the manacles, from the hawk ties, from the sovereignty of all forms of entanglements that are going to stop you from achieving human perfection and human transcendence. We have lots of hadith and narratives from Prophet and the Imams indicating that in Islam you have this sense of peace, this sense of composure and tranquility that is going to be offered and is going to be promoted within all types of rituals, all types of conversations, all types of interdialogical conversations and interactions. And as a result of that, when we talk about, you know, any type of atrocity, any type of bellicosity, any type of hostility or hatred or something that is going to stop you from that sense of peace, you can see the flagrant, blatant manifestation of there is something wrong. It's not going to be connected to that true Islam that is coming from Prophet Muhammad. In Islam, we have forgiveness, we have compassion, we have this sense of great openness and flexibility to understand numerous possibility. It is from Imam Ali alayhi salam, a hadith indicating that even in terms of animals, if you've got, for example, some animals and you want to gaze them out, make sure that you gaze them out in places where you can see beauty. And, you know, if you've got, for example, some animals with you and you want to just get some milk or something, make sure that your nails are not, you know, strong enough or are not sharp enough or something. Maybe they are going to be perturbed or something. So you can see that subtle understanding, that subtle attention towards the human, the animal rights. How could you ever be oblivious of the decency of human rights? And the other thing that we can see in Prophet's conversations all the time, or in Quran as well, is the manifestation of peace in terms of anything that you do is going to be moving in line with the path of God, towards God, and you know, you got to help people towards that path. So if you do something or you facilitate something that is going to stop people from experiencing that sense of peace, it's going to be condemned and denounced. And as a result of that, I think that we need to get the psychosocial cultural factors of those incidents analyzed to understand if they're instigated or if they're manipulated or if they're coerced, for example, in one way or the other. Otherwise, awareness is the key. You know, in Islam, we have verses like, وَلَا تَقْفُ مَا لَيْسَ لَكَ بِهِ إِلْمٍ, إن السمع والبصر والفؤاد كل أولئك كان عنهم مسؤولا, where it says that do not abide by anything that you're not aware of. I mean, your eyes, your heart, your ears, all of them are accountable, are responsible. So you can't just say, well, I'm going to say this because of hearsay, or I'm going to go with this because of, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry. There's always an understanding. There's always an awareness. And how could you allow people to do something without an awareness? And that awareness has to be connected to a great source of quintessential comprehensive analysis, something that gives you, offers you an exhaustive analysis in terms of a solid, recondite account of what is going on. And therefore, anything that is going to come from a superficial, perfunctory sort of layer instigated by external factors, you know, to the service of some specific people, is going to be condemned and denounced because it obviously impedes the process of that sense of peace. So the bottom line is that in the macro and micro project of an Islamic-based program, you can always see connectedness. I mean, there are lots of hadith from Prophet Muhammad that if you try to help somebody out, if you've got somebody, for example, with a problem, just go and seek, you know, avenues that can help that person, you know, in regards to that excruciatingly painful circumstances. So there is no indication. There is no indication whatsoever in Quran or in Prophet's practice or the Imams after Prophet indicating that you have to just take it upon yourself to go and, you know, basically kill people if they're not in agreement with you or they have, they're not on the same page with you or something. So that philosophy is, and I want to make sure I, you know, call a spade a spade, that philosophy that is going to be associated with atrocities or brutality is going to be an anti-Islamic philosophy. In Islam, there is no such a thing of atrocity, there is no such a thing of hostility, there is not such a permission. Nobody is going to allow himself or herself to go and, you know, make the fur fly and develop excruciatingly painful circumstance against people by the name of sacred, consecrated understanding of Quran or something. There's always that sense of, I want to argue, and I'm sure that this could be discussed and explicated in a more effective program, that we have in Islam a recondite demonstration that can corroborate. In Islam, we have this great demonstration, manifestation of composure, not only in interpersonal but intrapersonal aspects, because the idea is that once you're at peace with yourself, once you experience that sort of phenomenological tranquility deep down your own realm of possibility, you would be able to be kind and compassionate towards people. And you know, when you see the Prophet's practice, when Prophet was walking down the street, people could smell the fragrance of Prophet. But when people, it's always in the practice of Prophet that any time somebody, you know, comes across the Prophet, it was the Prophet who was extending his hands as the demonstration of shaking hands. And as long as his hands, the other guys, for example, hands were in the hands of Prophets, the Prophet did not try to, you know, let him go or something. It was the manifestation. People were saying in the practice of Prophet that Prophet's manifestation was also associated with a smile, with a sense of compassion, with a sense of benevolence, a sense that he was always trying to demonstrate the respect, the explication of respect, the elucidation of understanding. It was always perceptible in Prophet's practice or something. You can never see even one incident that Prophet addressing children, for example, tried to sell them short or downgrade them or something. There were often occasions where the Prophet was late, for example, for the prayer, for the congregational prayer, and people were wondering where the Prophet was. They were trying to chase the Prophet, and they found out he was just having some playful activity with the kids, and the kids were riding on his shoulders, and he was not giving that sense of, well, I'm the Prophet, you're the kids, I'm not going to give you that sense of power or something. So how could such a philosophy brim with understanding, awareness, vivacity, kindness, and compassion could ever be associated with any sense of brutality? I mean, the Prophet himself says that when you just go to your house, if you've got neighbors who can even see, for example, the fruits that you purchase, you know, for your own house or something, if they can observe, you know, share some of them with them. Or he says that if you just wake up in the morning, if you go to bed and before you wake up, there are people around you who are hungry, It's your responsibility to go and take care. How could you ever take it up on yourself to go and by the name of consecration or the aspects of the values of Islam, take it up on yourself to go and commit atrocities or something? That's against the philosophy of, you know, Islam. And one of the pillars of Imam Hussein's culture in terms of the etiological aspect can be well expounded and explicated by virtue of the same understanding, because Imam Hussein, as the embodiment of all human values, was fighting against all these forms of brutalities that are going to revamp the pillars of Islam from the root, because of those misunderstanding, because of the ignorance, and because of the solipsism and egoism and egotism. You know, one of the beauties of Islam and Ashura in particular is that it allows you to understand that the world is not going to be just circumscribed in egoist-oriented predilections. The world is going to be enhanced and enriched on the strength of an understanding of quintessential comprehensive realms of life.
Right. I don't want to interrupt you, but I do apologize. We only have a couple of minutes left. So I wanted to get to this one last sensitive point that I wanted to touch upon, is the women's role, a woman's role in all of this, in all these kinds of movements. You know, Lady Zainab's speeches, obviously, after the tragedy of Karbala in the courtyard of Yazid, we all know of very well, very strong speeches. We've seen women in today's modern world, like Tawakkul Karman, the Al-Khawaja sisters in Bahrain, etc., taking a very prominent role.
Right.
If you could just explain that for us in just 2 minutes' time, I would appreciate
that. Yeah, 2 minutes is going to be,
I can imagine.
But I can just say that Hazrat Zainab Salamullah Alayha, peace be upon her, is the manifestation of virtues of potential and possible sphere of a woman. You can see that she witnesses perishing of the most beautiful, the most beloved manifestation of life right in front of her eyes. And imagine, if that happens to you, the least that can happen to you is just you get depressed, you go and think about suicide or something. And now she has to take the role of leading a caravan, the group of people whom she is going to be responsible for. So the question is that, what is it that she has found to deal with all of them, with all these excruciatingly painful experiences, to deal with this incident? And what is it that she can resort to, she can rely on, to provide herself with that sense of composure? That itself is the manifestation of a new horizon, because it helps us understand that when she observes patience and perseverance and she takes it upon herself to go with the steadfastness throughout this journey, you know, and experiences a phenomenological tranquility while, you know, while dealing with the seemingly insurmountable obstacles, it demonstrates that she is connected to a sphere, to a horizon of possibility way beyond this world. And she's also exposing the fact that everybody can have values, and those values are going to allow you to understand that life is not going to be just cooped and caged in the perfunctory manifestation and sedimentation of life. So you can see that even for nocturnal prayer, she does not stop that. You know, Imam Sajjad says that I saw her, you know, just observing her nocturnal prayer in the midst of all these excruciating, painful experiences, and that explicates how deep this incident can be. Yeah.
I do apologize, Dr. Farthing. Very interesting conversation. I think that was a very appropriate note to end on about Lady Zainab. But of course, we do appreciate you speaking to us. I certainly learned a lot, and I'm sure our viewers did as well.
Thank you.
We appreciate you taking your time.
I hope that we can have projects in this that
definitely, I'm sure,
develop awareness for people, because
I'm sure
they can have great
so.
Significant implications for social cultural programs.
Definitely. I'm sure we will try to do that. Again, thanks very much for joining us.